Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
we are back at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show for a riveting and important hour. This show is going to be a major resource. We believe, have reason to believe, that we are within reach, hopefully, of shutting all the nuclear plants in New York, making New York nuclear free. We're expecting momentarily a decision from Entergy on what they're going to do with the Fitzpatrick reactor. And we also have the Ginna reactor, I guess, G-I-N-N-A, Ginna reactor, and the two at Indian Point to talk about. We are honored with the presence of Arne Gundersen, one of the great experts and one of the most important resources we have in the safe energy campaign in this world, to talk about this issue. We're also joined by Jessica Azule from and Gary Shaw from the Indian Point area, and Tim Judson from NEARS, who's been doing tremendous work on Fitzpatrick and many, many other reactors around the country. Gary, are you there? Jessica?
Yes, this is Jessica. Thank you for having me.
Okay, good. And Arne, you're with us?
Yeah, hi, Harvey.
Hi, Arne. How are you? It's an honor to be with you again, Arne. And
last time I saw you was in
Canada, as a matter of fact. Oh, I'm glad I mentioned that. We want to celebrate the coming of Justin Trudeau. I don't think there was a prime minister in the world more obnoxious and destructive of the environment than Stephen Harper. And it's really, I have a cousin in Canada who's dancing in the streets right now. So let's celebrate the victory of the Liberals in Canada. Let's hope that they help us shut nuclear. That wasn't much of an issue in the campaign, but we're hoping that Justin Trudeau will be on our side on the nuclear issue. Tim Judson, you're there?
Yes, I am. Thanks, Hardy.
Oh, good. And Gary Shaw. Gary, you with us? Gary Shaw's not with us yet. So we're going to do what we did this week, what we did last week on Pilgrim, to celebrate and to move forward with the announcement that the Pilgrim reactor will be shutting. We're hoping that Entergy will make another shutdown announcement within this short period of time. I want to start with Jessica. I know you got a little cold. You're in the Indian Point fight. What can you tell us currently about what's going on in Indian Point and what we need to look forward to? Then we'll talk to Arne and Tim about the general fight of all the reactors. But Jessica, talk to us a bit about Indian Point, if you would.
Hi. Actually, I can't really talk about Indian Point. I'm actually located in Syracuse, New York, watchdogging Fitzpatrick and Ginna.
So oh, good.
I can talk
all right. Well,
all about
talk.
Fitzpatrick
yeah,
and
Ginna.
And we have a lot of solidarity with the activists downstate working to shut down Indian Point, but that's not my primary reactor that I work
okay,
on.
Okay, so let's hear about Fitzpatrick and Ginna. All nukes are equal as far as I'm concerned. There is one purpose for a nuclear power plant in this world, which is to be shut down as soon as possible. So tell us about Fitzpatrick and Ginna, please, as a native of the region.
Absolutely. I'm very, very happy to talk about them. So Fitzpatrick and Ginna are both located in central New York. They're both on the shore of Lake Ontario. Ginna is about 20 miles east of Rochester, New York, and Fitzpatrick is about 30 miles north of Syracuse, New York. And both reactors are facing pretty big economic challenges. Both companies have admitted that the plants are losing money and have become unprofitable. Ginna has basically Exelon, which is the controlling owner of Ginna, has announced that it wants to shut down the reactor, but has sought a subsidy to keep the reactor open. at least for a short period of time. And we are currently awaiting to see what Entergy's decision will be on whether it wants to shut down Fitzpatrick. So both of these reactors, their shutdown or possible shutdown is no big surprise for people who've been following the nuclear saga. We've seen a big economic turn against nuclear reactors in the last few years. There are a number of reactors across the U.S. that are economically challenged. And in upstate New York, we've seen a bunch of factors lead to the possible closure of these reactors. And those include our energy demand isn't really growing. Electricity rates are pretty low, so they're not able to earn very much in the market. And they're facing stiff competition, not just from natural gas, but also from renewables like wind and rooftop solar. So we think the trend is really moving against these reactors, and I think the big question for New York is whether we're going to let the reactors close or whether the Public Service Commission and the governor are going to work to try to save the reactors, which would come at a huge cost to electricity consumers.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jessica. Arne Gundersen, you are one of our great experts, and you alone, as far as I'm concerned, are responsible for about 90% of what we know about Fukushima. We entered a nuclear catastrophe where nobody knew anything, pretty much except you. Can you tell us what you can about the two reactors in upstate New York and the two down at Indian Point?
Yeah, let's talk about Fitzpatrick first. Fitzpatrick is owned by a company called Entergy, and they had seven plants that they owned, that they sold electricity directly into the market. That's called a merchant plant. And they've already closed two of them. And what that means is that a lot of their costs that used to be carried by seven plants are now carried by five, and one of those is Fitzpatrick. So what's happening is Entergy is now in a death spiral because they've got more costs being covered by plants that weren't competitive in the first place. And I think, like Jessica said, the what's driving this is the fact that solar and wind and gas are much lower in price than these nukes. So they couldn't compete before, and now we've got a case, at least at Fitzpatrick, where the costs to run Fitzpatrick are higher than they were even last year because there's fewer plants to carry their overheads. Now, the other piece of this is that, in the good times, and there were good times with these nuclear plants making a boatload of money, they never gave any money back. But now that the situation has changed, like Jessica said, they're at the table asking for a handout. But what that means is that the local community that the plant is in, and Fitzpatrick is upstate in Fulton and Oswego, New York, the local plant community wants to keep the plant. So they put political pressure on to get that that effectively a donation, a subsidy from the government in New York City. And I don't think that's fair because what's happening is all of the rest of the people in New York are being stuck carrying higher electric bills. So yes, that the community of Oswego will lose one of its three nuclear power plants, but the cost to the rest of the New York State will be lower, which means there's more jobs created by shutting Fitzpatrick down than by keeping it running. So the same thing happens at Ginna. Ginna is a little tiny plant, one of a kind, with a very large staff, and it's carrying a lot of costs. A coal plant, let's look at a gas plant. A gas plant has about 100 people. Ginna has 500. So that the costs to create the power from that nuclear plant are huge in comparison. So what's happening at Ginna is the same thing. They're holding up Rochester, a big city in upstate New York, and they're saying, well, we're going to shut down and lose these good jobs unless you give us $100 million a year. But if they did shut down, the remaining New Yorkers would save $100 million a year, and those jobs would be created elsewhere. So that's what seems to be going on throughout New York State. Indian Point's a little bit different. In my opinion, Indian Point's the most dangerous plant in the country because emergency planning is awful. And it's very near a fault line that was discovered much after it was built. So actually, the core damage frequency at Indian Point is the highest in the world. And yet the NRC allows Indian Point to continue to run.
Wow. Thanks, Harvey. So is that Gary Shaw?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. So let's go to Tim Judson now. Arnie, thank you for that. And now let's get it straight here. Entergy owns both reactors at Indian Point and Fitzpatrick. And then Exelon owns Ginna, is that correct? Tim Judson, can you tell us what the situation is?
Well, Ginna, I mean, effectively Exelon controls Ginna, but in fact, Ginna, as well as the two 9 Mile Point reactors in New York and a nuclear power plant in Maryland called Calvert Cliffs, Exelon actually half owns with the French nuclear utility EDF, which was the result of a sort of failed attempt by Exelon and EDF to partner on building new reactors, Exelon's predecessor, Constellation, to partner with EDF to build new reactors in the U.S. And that quickly fell apart about 5 years ago. And Constellation, which was actually about to go bankrupt at the time, couldn't buy its way out of its partnership with EDF, and basically gave EDF half ownership of these five reactors that it owns. And when Exelon took over Constellation, again, as a last attempt for Constellation to avoid bankruptcy, Exelon ended up half owning Ginna and the two other reactors in New York. So it's one of these complicated corporate shell games that's been going on. But that's effectively the case.
Well, now Exelon, if I'm not mistaken, is begging the Illinois legislature to get a handout for five reactors in Illinois. Is that correct?
That's right. Exelon has really, been kind of spearheading a whole sort of industry-wide campaign to try to subsidize these old reactors to keep them profitable, and rather than to shut them down. And so for the last 2 years, Exelon has been holding renewable energy in the state of Illinois hostage, essentially to a demand that the state subsidize these old reactors that it owns, before it will allow any more renewable energy to come onto the grid.
Okay, so you've been focused a lot on Fitzpatrick, Tim Judson. We're expecting an announcement from Entergy, and from this we'll go to Gary Shaw. What do you think is going to happen with Entergy? And tell us what happens if, as expected, they announce that they will shut Fitzpatrick. What are you looking for?
Sure. Well, yeah. Thanks, Harvey. This is, New York is actually sort of a perfect microcosm of what's going on with the industry's crisis across the country. Essentially, you have these six reactors in New York, including Fitzpatrick and Ginna, Indian Point, and 9 Mile Point. And, on the one hand, you have a governor who's very opposed to Indian Point, who lives near there, has wanted to close it for years, but, much of the state government is aligned toward trying to close Indian Point, essentially because of the proximity to New York City and the issues that aren't even. Then you have these other four reactors that are in upstate New York, along the shore of Lake Ontario, which is a very different place politically, and economically. And, there's very, very high unemployment in the areas around where these other nuclear plants are. And the state government has been very unwilling to question the operation of those nukes because they're the biggest employers in the area. But the reality is that the cost of running these things is too high. The energy prices are low enough that they can't make a profit. And so Exelon and Entergy have been trying to angle away to obtain subsidies. The problem for Entergy with Fitzpatrick is that they've been in a fight for 10 years with Governor Cuomo over Indian Point, and he doesn't want to do them any favors. And so what's been happening is that Entergy has been kind of playing the usual game that they've been playing in other states, threatening to close the plant, hoping to kind of queue up a political crisis around the job losses and local property tax losses, to basically get the state government to do them a big favor. That's much more complicated because Entergy's in a fight with Cuomo around Indian Point. And so what Governor Cuomo has said is don't play blackmail with me, Entergy. I'm not going to even entertain the thought of whether we're going to subsidize this plant until there's actually a decision to close. And then we have a process in New York where the Public Service Commission, the utility regulator, will have to take a look at whether there's going to be any negative impacts on the reliability of the electricity grid if that plant goes away. Entergy's problem with Fitzpatrick is that there's a vast amount of power plant capacity in that area of the state, and so there's not very likely to be a reliability problem if Fitzpatrick goes away. As Arnie mentioned, the politicians in the community where Fitzpatrick is have really been rallying hard the last few weeks and pushing the governor to do something. And so, we know there's some backdoor negotiations going on right now. We're not sure exactly what's going to happen, but we do expect this to start off, potentially with a decision by Entergy to close the plant next week, and that's going to then start a whole other political process that we think is, potentially pretty scary.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Tim. Let's go to Gary Shaw. Gary, you are focused on Indian Point. Also, the two reactors there owned by Entergy. What will happen at Indian Point if Entergy now announces that they're going to shut Fitzpatrick? And, of course, we don't expect them to say Fitzpatrick is going to shut tomorrow. This is a big a deal here. We saw last week when Entergy announced its shutdown at Pilgrim that they're talking about shutting it in June of 2019, for God's sakes. Now, there's a lot of question whether when they have to refuel, whether they're actually going to put in another load of fuel. But you have two reactors at Indian Point, and which I can barely say this. Indian Point 2 does not have a license. And Indian Point 3's license, as I understand it, expires in December. Can you tell us what's exactly happening at Indian Point?
Well, as some people know, relicensing process generally takes about 2 to 3 years for the NRC to give a rubber stamp. We're now in the ninth year of the relicensing battle to relicense Indian Point 2, which Indian Point 2's license expired in September of 2013. Indian Point is a two-unit plant, so it's actually making money for Entergy, although I believe that they saw the writing on the wall several years ago when Entergy tried to spin off its entire Entergy Nuclear Northeast business into a separate company so they could minimize the liabilities of the parent corporation. The thing they were trying to do is create a corporation called Anexus. The New York State Public Service Commission vetoed their request to spin off the business, saying it was not in the best interest of the citizens of New York. So Entergy is fighting like hell to try and maintain, to get Indian Point makes them a profit. It's the only plant in the Northeast for them that's been profitable at all. The reality is that the only publicly known sale of Indian Point Energy into the lower grid, which means Westchester County and New York City, is a 560 megawatt contract with Con Edison. They do a hell of a lot of advertising saying that they provide 25% of the downstate grid's energy. That's a bold-faced lie. Electrons will go to the path of least resistance, so some of their electricity is going down into the grid, but somebody else is paying for them. They are selling their most of their energy on the spot market and into other areas. So New York will not be hurt. New York City will not be hurt by Indian Point closing. A couple of years ago, a bunch of us from the Indian Point Safe Energy Coalition went up to the headquarters of the New York Independent System Operators, NYISO, and the vice president who gave his lecture to us said that very day, and this was in 2011, 2011-2012, he said that very day Indian Point 2 could go offline. There would be no drop-off in reliability to the downstate grid. And if Indian Point also went offline when its license expired in 2015, there might be a shortfall of a couple of hundred megawatts, but that was only if the electricity usage kept climbing at a steady rate. And we know because of energy efficiency and new policies like demand response that the energy needs have not grown. They've stayed totally level. So Entergy has already made some overtures to New York State to talk about a deal to close Indian Point. And
well, that's
what's happening right now. There's the other part of this,
for?
By the way, is that New York State has withheld, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation has withheld a water quality certificate that is a prerequisite for an operating license for that plant. And the reason they did it is because Indian Point sucks in 2.5 billion gallons of Hudson River water every day in a once-through cooling system that then goes back into the Hudson River at about 110 to 115 degrees. And their intake system kills billions of fish and smaller aquatic life every year, and that's a violation of the United States Clean Water Act. So under the United States Clean Water Act, New York State is demanding that Entergy use the best technology available, and that would be a closed-cycle cooling system. Entergy is fighting that tooth and nail. They want to put in something called wedge wire, which will not decrease any of the amount of water that they suck in from the Hudson River, and it won't mitigate any of the thermal pollution that's coming out of there. But what it will do is it will reduce the fish kill a little bit. The ironic part is that in 2003, Entergy joined with Riverkeeper and Scenic Hudson in a lawsuit against the federal EPA, which had suggested using wedge wire, and Entergy themselves argued in court that wedge wire was a system not designed for any system that goes above 100 million gallons of water a day, and they use 25 times that amount, but they're saying they want to put in wedge wire. So basically, they are hypocrites and are simply trying to squeeze out every nickel before this plant closes.
Jessica Azulay, does that all sound familiar about what's happening at Guinea and Fitzpatrick?
Well, I will say that Entergy's hypocrisy sounds very familiar, in that Entergy has been fighting subsidies for other power generators, including Guinea. They were very active in the Guinea case and very public about in their filings about opposing a subsidy for Guinea. They also have filed a lawsuit against the New York State Public Service Commission for the subsidy that was approved for the Dunkirk coal plant. And so they've been really unhappy about subsidies for other generators. And the idea that they're now, in secret negotiations with Cuomo over some kind of deal for Fitzpatrick smacks of a lot of hypocrisy to us.
Well, I love that. I love hearing that one nuclear plant is fighting against the subsidies for another one. That's really exciting. We're terrific.
Yeah,
on that.
I mean, it's been an interesting thing, and I think it just shows the desperation of the big power generators and the nuclear operators in upstate New York. There's only so much demand to go around. The market prices are very low, and they really are kind of in a fight to the death with each other. The other thing I'll mention just about the safety of Fitzpatrick, because I think there's a lot of talk about Indian Point being very dangerous, and it is. It is an extremely dangerous plant. But, all nuclear power plants are dangerous, and Entergy's Fitzpatrick nuclear plant, it has some specific safety concerns that we've been watchdogging for the last few years. They're a Fukushima-style nuclear reactor. They're one of 22 now operating in the U.S., and they have a particularly bad design flaw in that, unlike all the other Fukushima-style reactors in the U.S., they never installed a hardened wet well vent, which is a pretty faulty concept that the NRC required all Mark I reactors to install a few decades ago. It's supposed to try to help mitigate an accident and help mitigate a hydrogen explosion if there's a meltdown. But the operator, Fitzpatrick, never installed one, and Entergy, since taking over the plant, hasn't installed one either. We have an active petition at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission bringing this to their attention, and it's a pretty dangerous situation. If anything goes wrong at that plant, we think there's an extreme likelihood that the containment will not hold and that it will be breached. The plan that is on the books is for them to vent radiation and hydrogen and steam into an adjacent building where they know the ductwork will fail and the doors will blow off. And in the best case scenario, there won't be an explosion at that time, but radiation and steam and hydrogen would be released at the ground level, right where the workers are, you know, presumably trying to control an accident. So this is a huge safety concern, and with the financial trouble that Entergy is in, it really heightens our concern over the safety of the plant. They've been cutting the workforce. They've been deferring maintenance, and we're really concerned about them really running that plant into the ground, a plant that's already extremely dangerous. So this is just another layer for why we think it's so important that this plant shut down as soon as possible.
Arnie Gundersen, you worked in the industry for many years, and you are one of the few who has argued that there actually was a breach of containment at Three Mile Island, and of course, just recently there was another incident at Three Mile Island Unit 1. What are the structural shortcomings that we really need to focus on these dying New York reactors?
You know, if you look, Harvey, at all the accidents in the last 35 years, and that's TMI, Chernobyl, and the three at Fukushima Daiichi, the key is that none of their containments worked. So, you know, the Fitzpatrick reactor is particularly vulnerable because it's exactly like Fukushima Daiichi. And I agree that they said they were going to do things that they never did, and now the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is pushing them to make costly, expensive changes that will further make the plant uneconomical. So the containment failure is likely. One of the things I discovered at Fukushima Daiichi during that disaster was that there's something called a detonation shockwave. If you look at Unit 1 blow-up versus Unit 3 blow-up, there's a huge difference. And nuclear engineers never design containments for these detonation shockwaves. So if that happens at any of these reactors, and any essentially in the United States, you'll lose the containment, and you know, it's game over. You've released radiation out to 50 miles. That's not a good situation. You know, can I touch on the fish for a split second, Harvey?
Oh, of course. Please, Tony, go ahead.
Yeah, we shut down Vermont Yankee here, and this touches on what Entergy's experts are saying at Indian Point. And before that, before Vermont Yankee was built, we had a wonderful shad population in the river. 37,000 shad a year were going up the river. And then when Vermont Yankee got built, the thermal discharges, the hot water into the Connecticut River, prevented the shad from heading up, and the population got smaller and smaller and smaller. Well, this year, Vermont Yankee's been shut down, and guess what? The shad population is over its record for the last 30 years because we shut down Vermont Yankee. The same thing will happen at Indian Point. You know, they're killing billions of fish eggs with that with those thermal with the water that plant is sucking in, so that the net effect is that the river will be healthier when the nuclear plant is shut down.
Well, Arnie, if you can answer this question for me, and then Tim Judson, how the hell is Indian Point Unit 2 operating without a license? I mean, isn't there any kind of legal recourse? If I drive without a license, I get busted. I mean, what is going on? I think that's the only reactor in the country that doesn't have a license, but then Indian Point 3 is about to lose theirs. What is going on? And I know also, and I wish you'd comment on this, that the governor is actually fighting to shut Indian Point 2 and 3, unless I'm missing something. So here we have two reactors that are in opposite, being opposed by the governor and the attorney general and don't have licenses. Why are they still operating?
Yeah, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is, you know, obviously is cozy with the nuclear industry, and they have a provision in their administrative law that says if you're in hearings and the hearings run too long, we'll continue to allow you to operate even though you're not licensed. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. You know, when your driver's license expires, you got to pull over to the side of the road, but not in the nuclear industry.
Amazing.
The NRC, this is Gary Shaw, and the NRC operates under a structural conflict of interest. 90% of its budget comes directly from industry fees, and if the NRC ever shuts a nuclear plant, they lose jobs. So the reality is that it's not in the best interest of the people who work at the NRC to do the job that they have been hired to do, which is protect public health and safety. They're really operating to protect the industry, and it's a disgrace.
Tim Jensen, especially in terms of Fitzpatrick, but also your comment on Indian Point operating without a license, and what do you think is going to happen with Fitzpatrick when the announcement comes down?
Well, I mean, you know, I think with Indian Point, it's just as Arnie and Gary said. I mean, the situation is absurd, but it's sort of pre-authorized under the NRC's practices that just because this lawsuit, this epic lawsuit by New York State and Riverkeeper to challenge the relicensing is going on so long that they just plan to let Indian Point continue operating provisionally until the case is resolved. And, you know, and I think the reality is, too, that what you're going to see is that, you know, even if Entergy loses that case, you know, they're going to appeal it through the court system and try to keep it going for years and, you know, continue operating any employment without a license indefinitely, essentially. Which I think, you know, really sort of underlines the need for New York State to take more aggressive measures to ensure Indian Point closes, just like Vermont did with Vermont Yankee. You know, the unwritten story about the closure of Vermont Yankee, it wasn't, you know, simply Entergy's economic sort of, you know, frugality that caused Vermont Yankee to close. You know, the state government and the grassroots movement in Vermont foreclosed every other option that Entergy could have had. And, you know, even though Entergy was winning it, you know, was winning the lawsuits against the state to overturn the state's decisions. You know, the state legislature in Vermont was levying, you know, heavy taxes on Vermont Yankee, increasing the cost of running it. No utility in the state of Vermont would enter into contract to buy Vermont Yankee's power at an above market rate. And Entergy was really cut off, had all of its economic options cut off. And really, I think that's what's going to need to happen with Indian Point is, that, you know, the state, New York City, you know, by coming up with, you know, more aggressive plans for renewable energy and energy efficiency, you know, that's really going to be the way for the state to ensure that Indian Point closes is essentially by replacing it with, you know, with cheaper, lower cost, cleaner energy options. And in fact, that's kind of, you know, in terms of Fitzpatrick, you know, Jessica and I, you know, NEERS and the Alliance for Green Economy today released a report mapping out, you know, the alternatives to subsidizing Fitzpatrick and keeping it going. We released a white paper today that's called Replacing Fitzpatrick, and it basically lays out the alternatives to subsidizing these aging nuclear reactors, and shows that you can both replace nuclear power with clean energy sources like wind and energy efficiency and solar. You can create over two times as many jobs, and you can save electricity customers millions of dollars a year. And simply by investing in those clean energy options, you can actually reduce carbon emissions, even in addition to replacing the nuclear power plant. So what we showed in this report is that New York electricity customers are going to pay, or are paying now, and are going to continue to pay $290 million a year to buy electricity from Fitzpatrick. And That's even without subsidizing the plan to continue operating. So that's $290 million that could be put to, you know, to improving energy efficiency, to building wind farms, and that if you and if the New York State did that, then you could actually produce 21% more power through energy efficiency and wind, displacing effectively, in addition to Fitzpatrick, the equivalent of a 260-megawatt coal plant, you know, while saving customers money. And in fact, you know, for less than the cost of operating Fitzpatrick, you could actually, you know, create a just transition plan for the local community to reinforce the property tax base, to ensure that any workers that that are laid off by the closure of Fitzpatrick are going to be taken care of and helped, you know, to find new careers, new positions, and that you can still do that and save up to $60 million less than the cost of subsidizing Fitzpatrick to continue operating. So the whole question of, you know, whether continuing to run these plants, you know, is necessary for any possible reason, whether it's to preserve jobs, whether it's to reduce carbon emissions, or whether it's to provide reliable electricity, none of those arguments make any sense anymore because we have the clean energy options available to us to solve those problems at less money than we're going to pay to continue operating nuclear power plants.
Well, the question then is, how does this get translated into an actual shutdown? You know, we just had this victory at Pilgrim, where Entergy has said that they will shut down by June 1st of 2019. And, you know, a lot of us think that they're not going to get through a new refueling. My understanding is that this fuel cycle will last until sometime in 2017. And then the real test will come as to see whether they're going to refuel. Where do we finally cross over on flipping the switches on these nukes in New York? Arnie, you've seen a lot over the years. Where do you think that we can flip the off switch on Indian Point or Fitzpatrick or Ginna?
I think you had it right, Harvey. The key is that once a nuclear plant refuels, it likely will run for the next 18 months. So the next big refueling at Fitzpatrick is a half year away. So the question will be whether or not the Entergy will say, you know, in 2016, should we run it until 2018? You know, and so the horizon on these things is an 18 month window where they'll make a decision as they approach a refueling outage, whether to burn that fuel and, essentially contaminate $50 million worth of radioactive uranium, or do they want to sell that elsewhere and, close up shop and move on. I don't know a day. I had said that Vermont Yankee would shut down in 2015, and I nailed that one, but I truly believe, like I think it was Tim said, that 2017 is a likely day for the two Entergy plants that are in the mix, Pilgrim in Massachusetts and Fitzpatrick in upstate New York.
I'll one up on that, Arnie. I actually think that, I mean, the time frame that Entergy is looking at right now for Fitzpatrick is actually to potentially close it in October 2016. When it's scheduled to shut down for the next refueling. That's really why they're putting the screws to the governor now, because they need to make a decision by the end of the year whether they're going to order new fuel for Fitzpatrick for next fall.
And where do we stand on the fuel cycle?
Based on the way that the case for the Ginna reactor is starting to shake out, it's a potential that Ginna could be closing in March of 2017.
Jessica, do you know where we stand on the fuel load at Ginna and Fitzpatrick?
Yeah, I believe Tim's right. I think that Entergy is scheduled to refuel Fitzpatrick in the fall of 2016, so next year, and they're very anxious to make a decision before the end of the year, possibly by the end of this month, as to whether they're going to start planning for that refueling outage and whether they're going to order the fuel. And then with Ginna, the recent settlement that was just made public yesterday by parties in the Ginna case, the original plan for the reliability support service agreement, which was a proposed subsidy for Guinea to get through a reliability need, was originally through October of 2018 and has now been cut until the end of March 2017. So a year and a half has been shaved off that proposed subsidy now, which is really great news. It's going to save millions of dollars for consumers, and it's going to cut the lifespan of that plant by another year and a half if that deal gets approved.
And Gary, so, well, go ahead, sorry.
So yes, that's the timing. I think we anticipate, you know, hopefully Fitzpatrick will shut next year, and then, you know, just a few months later, we'll see Guinea shut as well.
And Gary Shaw, what does the fuel cycle look like at Indian Point, and what's the possibility that we could get them cut off before the next refuelings?
I'm not sure when the next refueling is, across the two reactors. But I don't think that again, Entergy is putting a huge amount of money in this public relations campaign to talk about the how essential Indian Point is. It's totally false, because most of their energy is being sold on the spot market, not in the local area. So I'm not sure when the next refueling is for either two or three.
Well, Indian Point 3 refueled in March of this year. So, Indian Point 3 will refuel in March of 2017. And I think that Indian Point 2 is going to be in the spring of next year. It'll refuel. But I think Gary's right. I mean, there's really nothing on the radar screen as far as, Indian Point closing anytime soon. I think with Indian Point, we're in a real fight, and it's going to take extraordinary measures to make sure that plant closes.
How do we evaluate, Arnie? How do we evaluate the sincerity of the of Governor Cuomo and the Attorney General's actions on Indian Point? Are they really doing everything they possibly can, and you other folks can jump in on that. But Arnie, what do you think?
You know, the key is that the community facing the shutdown is screaming loudly, but the thousands of other communities that are going to save money should be prominent in Cuomo's mind. So the question is, will he listen to the one community that's screaming loudly about it losing its plant? Or will he take the best interests of New York State and protect all the consumers in New York with lower electric rates? And I really don't know how that one's going to shake out. I'll pass it over to somebody else.
Well, the other part of that is...
That the governor has been vocal about his opposition to relicensing and sort of leading the way. Attorney General Eric Schneiderman has been extremely active, not just in terms of the closed cycle cooling, but they also filed suit with Richard Brodsky over fire safety exemptions. They're really the New York State government is really working hard to force Entergy to live up to better standards, and actually they're doing a lot of stuff to cost Entergy money all the time. And a number of years ago, the guy who's now the chairman of the Westchester County Board of Legislature, Michael Kaplowitz, said that the way you close a nuclear plant, because he knew that the NRC would never do it on their own, is to break the business model. And Entergy is extremely economically stressed at this point. It's the reason that they've shut Vermont Yankee, and they're shutting Pilgrim, and they're on the precipice with Fitzpatrick. So I think that decisions from the court might hasten their closing and their willingness to make a deal with New York State.
Yeah,
Gary
said. There's really no question of the governor's intent and the attorney general's commitment, to closing Indian Point. In fact, about 3 months ago, the governor's energy secretary was before the state legislature affirming that they're doing everything they can to try to close Indian Point. I think there's no doubt that they could do more. And I think that I think the issue right now is an issue of sort of political brinksmanship. And, you know, the movement to closing the In Point for the last 10 years or so has pretty much been limited, you know, to the local communities and activists, an activist movement in the Hudson Valley, you know, which is, you know, essentially right around Indian Point. And, you know, the biggest, you know, population that's affected, you know, the biggest political entity in the region is New York City, which is entirely within 50 miles of Indian Point and very much directly downwind. And, you know, New York City has not been in the fight to close Indian Point for over a decade, largely because the previous mayor of New York, Michael Bloomberg, you know, was supporting Entergy actively and trying to and opposing the state's efforts to close Indian Point. And, you know, we're working on, you know, on turning that around right now. There's actually a resolution before the New York City Council, you know, calling for NRC to close Indian Point, to not relicense it. And, you know, and we've got about, you know, half the number of city council members we need to get this thing passed, you know, signed on right now. We're getting more all the time. But, you know, but it's really going to be getting New York City in the fight, you know, and sort of opening up a whole other political front, you know, for support for closing the plant. And that's going to really spur, I think, the governor to take more aggressive action. To know that he's got the back, you know, he's got the backing of New York City, and New York City, sort of going to bat for this is really going to be, I think, the thing that's going to turn the tide.
Well, let's hope. Now, Guinea is a small player in all this, I assume. And what are the odds on Guinea not getting through its next fuel cycle? It's shutting down at the end of this one.
Well, Guinea is refueling right now. They're refueling right now. They're authorized to refuel basically by the fact that the Public Service Commission in New York, you know, authorized this subsidized contract that's essentially the subject of the settlement that Jessica was talking about. But they're, you know, after they come back online later this month, you know, the next refueling is going to be in March 2017, and that's when this contract is going to expire with this subsidy for Guinea. That's, you know, and as part one of the terms of the settlement is to really put the screws to the local utility, Rochester G&E, to do, you know, the transmission system upgrades, you know, the power line and substation upgrades that are necessary to make sure that as of March 2017, that Guinea is no longer going to be needed to keep the lights on in the area.
So we're going to say that to a certain extent, it looks pretty good that this will be the last fuel cycle for Guinea. But we're nowhere near, and Fitzpatrick, it looks like, we're imminently expecting a shutdown announcement of some sort from Entergy for Fitzpatrick. And then the question then will be, will they'll finish this fuel cycle, and will they load up again? And I guess at Indian Point, we're really in limbo because we don't know what the hell the courts are doing here. I mean, you would think that at some point the courts would rule that enough is enough, but so far, even with the governor of New York, the whole apparatus of the state of New York coming down on these people, they're still insisting on operating, right? So at some point we're going to break, that will break, we would hope. The question then that I would want to ask is about Nine Mile. You've got two reactors up on the Great Lakes. One of them is, I think it's the oldest reactor, the second oldest in the country. Is anybody doing anything about Nine Mile Point?
Yeah, so Nine Mile Point is another dangerous reactor. Nine Mile One is also a Fukushima-style reactor. And Nine Mile Two is a Mark II boiling water reactor, which is pretty much just as dangerous as their cousin, the Mark One. Those reactors, because they're it's a two reactor unit, they have a little better economies of scale, like Indian Point does. So they're not facing the dire economic situation that Fitzpatrick and Guinea are facing right now. We continue to watchdog those two reactors and bring safety concerns to the public. You know, we've seen with other old reactors that it could just be a matter of time before something breaks. And, you know, hopefully if something breaks, it won't cause a catastrophic accident, but it'll be expensive enough that it won't be worth fixing. So I think Guinea and Fitzpatrick are really on the brink because of the economics, and Nine Mile One, because of its age, is vulnerable as well, you know, to an equipment failure.
Arnie Gunderson, do you have any technical specs on Nine Mile that might make it more vulnerable to shutdown that we haven't talked about?
Well, it's going to face the same Fukushima uprate costs that other plants had to face, because it's essentially, especially Unit 1, identical to the Daiichi disaster. So, you know, between now and 2020, there's, you know, probably $50 million to $100 million more in improvements that they're going to have to make to keep that plant up to new NRC standards. But it is different. It's owned by a different holding company, and it does have two units to spread its engineering charges out over, so the costs are a little bit lower. It's probably the most secure of the five plants in of the six plants in New York right now,
in terms of economics. But
what I would say, you know, too, and you know, in relation to Nine Mile, Harvey, is that you know, Nine Mile One is, I mean, it's basically tied with a reactor in New Jersey as the oldest reactor in the country, and essentially the third oldest reactor operating in the world. But you know, the way I got involved in anti-nuke activism actually was, you know, back in the late 90s when I was living in Syracuse, where Jessica is. And, you know, and safety problems in Nine Mile One, you know, had come out that essentially, you know, it was cracking apart from the inside due to, you know, the radiation exposure, you know, on the radiation bombardment of the internal components of the plant. And essentially, you know, we sort of got into, you know, fighting, you know, with NRC to close Nine Mile One because, you know, because it was so severely degraded. Even UCS, the Unit of Concerned Scientists at the time, had said that it was the worst case of aging-related degradation of any plant in the country. And, you know, and essentially, you know, NRC eventually, after a couple of years, you know, covered up the problem and accepted the utility's explanations that you know, they were going to manage the cracking of the internals at Nine Mile One just fine. And, you know, essentially here we are, you know, almost 20 years later. And, you know, we don't even know the internal condition of that plant. Then you have the next 9 Mile 1 is 9 Mile 2, which, you know, has actually been one of the most, you know, accident-prone plants in the country since the day that it was opened in 1988. And, you know, just a couple of years ago, Exelon, you know, implemented what they call a power uprate at 9 Mile 2, which increased the power output by 15%. They basically have packed more nuclear material into the core of 9 Mile 2. So it's running hotter and at higher pressure than it ever has, you know, and which means that, you know, all the dangers of the containment failing in an accident, the amount of nuclear material in that core that can blow out and contaminate the region, you know, is that much greater. So I think, you know, what you have at, you know, at 9 Mile is essentially, you know, just as dangerous as what's going on in the other, you know, with the other reactors.
Nine Mile One
is really, you know, one safety issue away from closing itself.
Yeah. So given that, you know, what Arnie has said, I mean, we do have some reactors in this country that are that should be basically classified as crumbling reactors. You know, with Davis Bessie probably at the top of the list in Ohio, but 9 Mile 1 is I'm sure Oyster Creek is also crumbling too. These really, really old ones that scare the hell out of me. And, you know, and then we have the fire safety issues at Indian Point. You know, it's all a big nightmare. So we are hoping...
Well, if you want to be a little more scared of Indian Point, the Spectra pipeline people are now expanding a natural gas line to a 42-inch diameter high-pressure gas line that runs about 100 feet from Indian Point. There's a lot of activity going on trying to stop that. The FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, approved the plan based on a undated, unsigned hand sketch of what the pipeline would be in its proximity to Indian Point, Paul Blanch, a former executive, a former engineer and executive in the industry, got that little plan through a FOIA request. And so there's a lot of activity trying to stop that from being done. Meantime, FERC says it's fine, and Entergy said, hey, we approve of what FERC said. So they don't really care that there's a new high-pressure gas pipeline going in close proximity to one of the to a nuclear plant. And just to correct what Arnie had said earlier, there are actually two earthquake faults. One is the Ramapo fault that was discovered just around the time they started to build Indian Point, and they ignored that. In 2008, the Lamont-Doherty Earth Observatory identified a second earthquake fault called the Stamford to Peekskill fault that intersects the Ramapo 1 mile from Indian Point 3. So you now have the confluence of an old nuclear plant, two earthquake faults, and a very high pressure expansion of natural gas pipelines. What could go wrong?
Oh, God. So you're telling me that next week we're going to be talking about Indian Point. I'm sorry, about Diablo Canyon. You're telling me that we now have conjoined earthquake faults within a mile of the two old reactors at Indian Point, to which
yes, 1 mile
being
from
added.
Indian Point 3. And just to compound that, in 2011, there was an earthquake in Virginia near the North Anna plant. That was a 5.8 magnitude earthquake, and the epicenter was 11 miles from North Anna. And the NRC does not use Richter scale measurements. They use G-force, ground acceleration forces. Indian Point, and I got this from a letter sent to me by one of the executives of the NRC because I asked specific questions. Indian Point, both the containment buildings and the spent fuel pools, not the spent fuel buildings, those are just commercial construction, but the pools themselves and the containment buildings are built to withstand 0.15 G forces. That's what they were designed for. The earthquake, the 5.8 earthquake in North Anna, reached G-forces of 0.26 to 0.28. So a 5.8 magnitude earthquake had almost twice the G-force acceleration that Indian Point was designed for, and Lamont Doherty estimates that the confluence of those two earthquake faults could result in a 7.0 event 1 mile from Indian Point 3.
Well, on that happy note, and that, of course, the North Anna earthquake is the one that almost took down the Washington Monument, for God's sakes. We're almost out of time. This has been devastating, as always. Arnie Gunderson, how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, we're on Fairwinds, FairWinds.org.
Okay, and Tim Judson at NIRS.org, NIRS.org, right?
That's right.
And Gary Shaw, real quick.
IPSICinfo.org.
And Jessica Azula?
It's agreenewyork.org.
Well, thank you all. This has been devastatingly important. I hope we'll spread this around the Internet. Another hour at the Solar Trophy Green Power Wellness Show. Thank you, folks in New York, and we'll see you on the Internet. Will we bid that apple?